Some guys have all the luck. The rest of us have the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Alfred E. Newman's favorite Medicare podcast. And now, he wanted to attend Woodstock in 1969, but didn't hear about it until it had ended. Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hello, everybody. It's Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast time again. It comes around so often, doesn't it? But yet we enjoy every minute of it. When I say we, I'm talking about Randy. I'm also talking about my nephew from Canada, Drew McMillan, who you just heard announce the opening of this episode that you're listening to right now. We're here to help people feel comfortable about joining the ranks of the Medicare nation. And when you do, you're probably going to have excellent medical insurance coverage at a very reasonable price. That's the whole goal that we're here for, to help you figure out how to cross that threshold and how to do it without feeling a lot of pain, without feeling a lot of confusion, and without being upset. And I think it's working, because I have to say that a lot of people are calling me or sending in questionnaires from our website, MedicareForTheLazyMan.com, more so than ever before, asking for my advice and assistance in the transition from Obamacare to Medicare. So I couldn't be happier about that. Recently, I've just rolled across this great country of ours, slowly recovering from the Wuhan flu lockdowns. And the only place I saw that was really locked down was New Mexico. Those people have to get their poop together. But it was in Arizona, things were pretty normal. And then, of course, Texas and Oklahoma, very normal. And Missouri and Illinois were the last two states we drove through. It was opening up to a greater extent than I had seen last December, but it's still a little more freedom. I mean, you still see some masks, people walking around, and I've been vaccinated, and almost everybody I know has been, or they've had the flu or the virus, and either way, you're protected for quite some time. I've heard that you're protected forever, but that's not the prevailing opinion yet. And so we are in Illinois for the summer, and that means Randy and I are 2,000 miles apart. Randy, can you hear me?
Who is that? Oh, I hear
it. It's me.
I hear an echo coming in through my headset. Oh, it's Doug.
It's me. How are you?
He's coming all the way from Illinois. That's like a different world.
It's a long, long way to Tipperary. So anyway, I was talking to Randy last episode that I can't wait till I can come back to Arizona. I just love it in Arizona, and I'm not real fond of Illinois, but circumstances beyond my control forced me to be in Illinois. So I'm put up with it with a smile. It's more
Did
like
you
a
have it?
Grimace.
Go ahead.
It's a grimace. It's not really a smile.
Oh, it's a grimace. Oh,
yeah.
You mean like somebody, you know, stepped on your foot?
Somebody that I owe money to stepped on my foot.
Oh, I see.
So I don't want to be unfriendly about the foot stepping, but I want to let them know I'm in pain.
So I have to ask, how long will it be before you make your annual trip up to visit with Pugsley?
I never have visited with Pugsley, and I hope never to. In fact, I think Pugsley, the governor of Illinois, should join his predecessors in the penitentiary. Because that's where most Illinois governors go to live after their sojourn in the governor's mansion.
There's getting to be quite a coffee clutch in there, I hear.
It's a 50-50 chance. If you're the governor of Illinois, the odds are 50-50 that you're going to wind up in the penitentiary. And that's the way we like it.
Or you're going to be underneath some, you know, large cement slab.
I don't think that happens to the governors too often. It does happen to some of our other, upstanding citizens that have successful businesses that all of a sudden come to a screeching halt in the middle of the night.
Yeah,
a couple of them wound up in an Indiana cornfield, buried real deep under the corn. And
they wondered, why that one section in the field was extra green.
Yeah, it was pushing. They were pushing up daisies for real.
Yeah, exactly. Now I really want to know. I need the straight scoop on what is the 17-year locust going on in Illinois.
Okay, first of all, I can tell you what I heard. What I heard was that Washington, D.C. had a bunch of the locusts come out and interfered with a presidential flight. I don't know whether it was a helicopter flight or whether it was at the Air Force base that they take off Air Force One, but it was a huge batch of locusts in Washington, D.C. When I look out my window, when I listen carefully, I hear nothing. I see nothing. There are no locusts here. You got me all worried and scared for nothing.
Well, you know what I heard? You know, I heard that same story about the locusts stopped some sort of a presidential flight or helicopter flight or some freaking thing. And all I can say is you ought to keep the freaking politicians out of the airfield.
And keep the politicians and the locusts in the same spot, right? Well, I will say one thing. Dominic, if you're listening, and I know you are, I don't want to get any crushed up locust shells in my mail. Just, talking about them is one thing. Actually having to look at one is going to freak me out. So I know Dominic's kind of a jokester, and I just don't want him sending me things in the mail that are going to frighten me when I open them.
Well, I think we probably can avoid that because, you know, I monitor all MLM mail coming into the office.
Yeah, and I'm never going to tell him my real address, so that's good.
No, rural route 2.
Yeah.
Enid, Oklahoma.
Yeah, close enough. That's close enough. Yeah, they'll forward it to me if necessary.
That's right. I've got family in Enid, so I've been there. And this is where in Oklahoma they have to catch their rainwater in a cistern. So,
yeah, that would be the dry western half of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
It's like somebody drew a line right down the middle of the state, right through Oklahoma City. Every time I drive through.
It's funny because if you're not from there, you don't understand it. But you can go in like to a cafe, mm-hmm. and you know normally around it's for the most part around Arizona and Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, all this stuff. You sit down at a cafe, and the first thing they bring you is a glass of water.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, down in Oklahoma, where my folks are from, there ain't no glass of water coming unless you ask for it.
Yeah,
Then you get just as little.
Yeah, and it could be on your bill if you're not careful, if you go to the wrong place.
Well, should we get after some Medicare?
Yeah, we can get after it. I was going to tell you about my trip. One little factoid. I stopped at a truck stop, and I was a rest area, a regular interstate rest area. And, of course, Mary hobbled off. She's got a bad knee, and so she hobbled off to the ladies' room. And I was finished much more quickly because I don't have any bad knees. And there was a sign there commemorating the Staked Plain. And
what?
Staked Plain.
Staked Plain.
Right. It is a historical fact. It's a huge flat area. I'm thinking the sign said it was 35,000 square miles or something like that. Some of the flattest land in America. People think Illinois is flat. People think the west part of, west of Amarillo in Texas, that's pretty flat. But the Staked Plain is a historical anomaly in that I believe the Comanches had something to do with it, or the conquistadors. One of those two is responsible for getting lost out there on this flat piece of land. And so they put stakes in the ground so they could follow them. Because, you know, if you just walk, one leg is always a little different than the other. And if you're walking on a piece of flat ground, you're going to walk in a circle. It may be a real big, huge circle. It may take you a day or two to do it, but you're going to wind up right back where you started. But on the Staked Plain, they avoided that. Whoever was crossing it, I don't know if it was the Comanches or the conquistadors, but they put stakes across this thing in order that future passages would not be going around in circles. And so I've got to look that up to find out what the deal was. But this sign in the rest area completely missed the boat on the history of the Staked Plain.
Oh, wow. That's interesting information. I too would love to know what that is all about, because the stake, I'd never heard that term, the staked plane. That's just not something that cropped up in my lifespan.
Well, one of us should do a little research, and frankly, depends on who gets to the Guinness first as to whether they lose all their ambition or not. But anyway, you said it best. Let's get after it.
Let's get after it, because we need to get some Medicare on the air.
Right. And I want to help you safely imbibe in the bars of Cave Creek, in Harold's and in the Buffalo Chip. So what I'm doing is reading a kind of a lengthy piece from a, from the mailbag, the MLM mailbag. But it's a short piece, short questions, and then my lengthy response. So enjoy. So this gentleman wrote a couple of, I did some quotes for him. His name is Rick. And he, I think, is going to become another client, another in the many clientele that Medicare for the Lazy Man is gathering. But he says, I've got a couple of questions for you. And this was after he had seen the reasonable prices and heard my recommendations about what to buy for his Medicare supplement. So he said, question number one, regarding these two companies, what kind of pricing are they using? The kind that increases each year as one ages, or the kind where they use the average of the local community? One of them is clearly cheaper to start, but I'm not sure that over time it will stay cheaper. Generically, do you have a recommendation on which type of pricing is advantageous for the client? And then his second question was, I have seen online ratings that show this one company is having top customer service, which is important to me. And then the other one is not so clear. I have seen some things that say they have no online service. I also saw reviews that showed terrible customer service in 2020, but more recent reviews that were positive. Do you have any thoughts on this question, or can you point me to an authoritative source? So he asked two good questions there. First of all, the first question is about the rating methodology. Now, we've talked about this before. There are three basic rating methodologies that are possible to use in a Medicare supplement situation. One of them is to use issue age. So if you're 65 years old, the rate tables that they would use to charge your premium would be that of a 65-year-old. The second rate methodology is attained age, where they've got a table of rates, and you start out at 65, and then when you turn 66, they increase your rate to the 66-year-old rate. And then when you turn 67, they increase it to the 67-year-old rate. And that sounds kind of bad. And then the third one, which he touches on here, is community rating. That is really a nasty, horrible way to rate, because it puts all the men, all the women, all the ages, the young people and the old people, throws them all into the same pot and charges them all the same price. And here's what makes that a bad deal for clients, because the insurance company is forced to predict what their clientele will be made up of. Mostly older people, mostly younger people, mostly women, mostly men. They have to roll the dice and hope that their guess as to a rate is going to be not too high, because nobody will buy it, not too low, because everybody will buy it. And it turns out they will have guessed incorrectly, and everybody will be old and sick before they begin to turn a profit. So I don't like to see a company using community rating. They're generally forced into it. They don't do it voluntarily. It's because the state they're in demands that they do it. And in this case, West Coast states tend to demand it, and a couple of East Coast states also, like New York. The two really important or talked about rate methodologies are attained age and issue age. And for some reason, there's a school of thought out there, a bunch of people who have convinced people that attained age is bad and that issue age is good, because they think if they charge you a certain rate when the policy is issued, that it'll never go up. And I had one of my favorite clients, Becky, and I had a knockdown drag out. We went around and around and around about this while I tried to convince her that it is immaterial. Anybody who tells you that that's an important consideration for your future costs in a Medicare policy is wrong. And the reason it's wrong is because each company has to decide what their profit margin is going to be, what their profit goals are, and they're going to raise their rates accordingly. So they can still raise the rates based on general inflation, cost of doing business going up, and things like that. The fact that they have a rate table that says they're going to give you a rate increase every year is immaterial, because they're going to give you a rate increase pretty much every year. And it's going to be a small rate increase if you have a small premium, like a high deductible plan would have. It's going to be a larger increase if you have a larger premium, like a full plan G or a full plan F might be. So a lot of factors play into it, but the rate methodology between issue age and attained age, I think, is immaterial. I think it's a red herring. I think there are a lot of people starting that conversation that don't know what they're talking about. So anyway, here's my response to Rick. Now that I've pontificated about that, I said, I'm happy you asked these questions because it gave me an opportunity to do some deep thinking. So question number one about the rate methodology. I said, if asked, I would say that both companies use the same rating methodology. I would also say that in my experience, it doesn't really matter in the long run because each company has a profit goal and each company will make sure that their rates are increased sufficiently to maintain profitability, but not so much as to lose market share. In other words, each company wants to charge as much as possible, but not so much that their competitors undercut them every time. I don't know where this issue age versus attained age theory came from, but I have been privy to the goings on in the insurance company rate meetings, and the results can be very arbitrary. Therefore, I don't place any stock in the theory that one is better than the other. To look at what may happen over time, I have limited help here. Limited help to offer you. So I was inspired by your question. And so what I've done is I've attached a file with three rates. I've attached one company's rates at age 80. I've already showed him age 65. And company B was much, much less expensive than company A. So I then said, okay, let's go back. And I showed his rate as a male non-smoker in his location at age 80. And company A was still more expensive than company B. And that's at age 80. So that's 15 years down the road. And then I said, okay, now company B stops having rate increases because of age at age 80. They're going to have rate increases because of the cost of doing business, because of medical inflation, so on and so forth. But they're not going to have any increases after age 80. For the reasons of advancing age. And so I ran the rates for age 99. And so company A, the more expensive one, the high deductible plan would have been a lot more expensive. at age 80, the expensive company, company A, would have been about $78. And at age 99, that same company would be charging $122. Company B, the less expensive one, was charging, I think, $35 at age 65. At age 80, they would only be $72 as opposed to $77 for company A. Company B stops having rate increases based on age at that point. And so age 99, they're still charging $72, and company A is up to $122. Now, both companies have to add to their rate increases the cost of doing business increase, the medical inflation factor, and all that stuff. But I believe that company B is going to be the better deal, and that happens to be the company that I show people and tout as being the best deal out there, because it's almost always the least expensive. So anyway, I said, this is all of the empirical evidence that I can scrape up without a crystal ball. So then he asked me about customer service. And he said, you know, I've researched the customer service, and one company has a sterling customer service. The other company, it's up and down. What should I think about this? And is there an authoritative source? And so I said, customer service is not likely to ever be much of a problem unless unusual circumstances arise. And this is a nightmare scenario that happened last winter between me and a client of mine and this company that I like very much. And this was during the Wuhan flu lockdown, when a lot of things were done automatically, or at least without intervention by humans. So the story I'm telling Rick here is that a client of mine had what was to him a very frustrating problem with this company during the virus shutdown, and it took a lot of intervention to get it fixed. This client is an engineer and very detail-oriented, so he read all of the legal disclaimers and the boilerplate and found wording that was inappropriate to the policies he and his wife wanted to buy. What happened was that the process by which the policies were printed and mailed out was almost totally automated. We eventually got it fixed, but there was a time that he was certain, my client, was certain that he was being victimized by some unseen force. And what they were doing was they were printing pages from policies that went to the wrong state. Every state has its own legal environment, its own rules and fine print and everything else. And so they kept putting together policies and mailing them out to this client that were not for his state, but for a similar type of individual in a different state. And boy, this guy was really frustrated. And it seemed as though this company's customer service was really bad, because the problem would not get solved, went on and on and on. There were about like 10 policies mailed out to this guy. In fact, he said, what am I going to do now? And I said, open a museum, because all of these policies, he could put them on display and people might pay money to see them. So I went on to tell Rick, the other types of things that you will encounter customer service will be address changes and premium payment changes. And that's about it. The company does not decide for themselves what claims to pay. Medicare does that. If Medicare considers it a legitimate claim, then the supplement plan has no choice but to pay their share or give credit to the deductible in the case of a high deductible plan. The best part of customer service with this one company we're discussing is that they do not farm out that function to foreign countries. I deal with companies that, when I have a question or a problem, are very difficult to understand because they subcontract the service to any number of foreign countries. That has never happened with this company in question that I like in Texas very much. To the best of my knowledge, at least, it's never happened. There will always be mistakes and maybe some unhappiness with an answer that is not what one has hoped for. But my experience overall has been very positive with this particular company. There actually is an authoritative source that I learned about this company from years ago. A very successful broker in California named Paul Sheldon just loves that company to death. I have been listening to his podcast for years. And for our listeners, it's Maximizing Medicare with Paul Sheldon. I've been listening for years and finally decided to step up and learn more about his favorite company. So far, I have not been disappointed. So that was my way of telling Rick that all isn't what it seems when people tell you the rating methodology is extremely critical to whether you're going to get ripped off or not. And customer service is a big, big deal. In most cases, it's not a big deal. I told you about the guy with the policies that were printed out incorrectly. That was a highly unusual case. It is basically customer service as somebody you'll almost never talk to once you have a Medicare supplement. Randy, you got a Medicare supplement, a Plan N, as I recall. You spend any time talking to them? You call them up and chit-chat with them on the phone?
I chit-chat with them most every week. No, I've never talked to anybody. I mean, as far as that goes, when I spent my time in the infectious disease ward because of COVID.
The place where they kept asking you where you were and you had no clue.
I had no clue. Yeah, that's right. For the first 3 days. But I fooled them. I looked up my location on my iPhone.
Well, that showed you were on the way back, on the road to recovery.
That's right. But ultimately, I was trying to outrun the zombie apocalypse, apparently. But yeah. I all of that goings on, and I had some, you know, earlier last year too. I've never talked to anybody other than the people at the hospital. You know, have you got some insurance? Yeah. Have you got Medicare? Yeah. Got some of that. Have you got a supplement? Yep. Got some of that. Okay. Bye. Here's your tag. Go sit in your room and we'll see you later.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never talked to anybody.
If you had to talk to them, you wouldn't even know who to talk to, would you?
No, I wouldn't know who to call anyway. I'd call Doug, but.
Well, that's the benefit of dealing with me.
Doug, help me out. I don't know what to do.
I'm not sure how much people believe me, but there is very little reason for the average person to have to talk to their insurance company because the hospitals and the doctors do all the billing. Medicare tells them what to pay. And unless you're going to move, you know, and you want to report a change of address, you're not really going to have anything to do with them.
No, no, you really aren't. And I can attest to that fact because it's almost like too easy. I mean, it's crazy, but I, you know, the thought crossed my mind several times, you know, this is something's got to be going wrong because it's too easy.
Well, as long as they don't ask you for a lot more money than you're paying them now, then everything's fine.
I do have a couple observations though.
Observe away.
So a couple thoughts I would share with the audience. If you're going to go for community-based pricing, don't live in Tombstone. Okay?
Wait a minute. I'm a little confused by that.
Tombstone, Arizona.
Yeah.
They price it based on what happens to the rest of the people in your town. Oh. They're all dead, okay?
They get shot,
and they end up poking up daisies.
They dig a hole on Boot Hill and toss them right in it.
That's right. And the last time I was in Tombstone, I went to the cemetery, and there's actually, I kid you not, tombstones that says, you know, Joe Doakes shot by so-and-so, you know, such and such a date. And then the next guy to him says, that's the guy that shot me, you know, like with an arrow, shot by so-and-so.
Kind of like I'm with stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
And your wife wears the I'm with stupid t-shirt, and then you get to wear the one with the arrow pointing at your head.
So I just thought I would summarize what I heard you say about the difference between attained age and what's the other one? Hope for age.
Issue age.
Issue age and attained age. What I heard you say is it doesn't make a bit of difference, but if it but if it really, really, really is something you want to look into, look for historical track records on increases.
Okay, well, that's right. But that's a little difficult to do sometimes. And so most people are just going to throw in the towel at that point and hopefully believe their advisor, if their advisor is me, telling them not to worry about minutia.
Yeah, absolutely. And some people can get so far into the rabbit hole on that kind of stuff, they can't make a decision, and don't let that happen.
Right.
So anyway, having said all that, I think we probably ought to thank our audience. But before we do that, let's send them to the Amazon.com shop. And buy your book, buy several, you know, it's coming up towards the, you know, the mid part of the year, and, you know, start saving up for your Christmas because people are going to want those books.
Kids of all ages find the book fascinating. And if you actually read the book because you have an interest in Medicare, you may like it. I'm expecting that you will. Most people do. Once you read it and you decided that you like it, why don't you go back to Amazon and leave a little short written review? Apparently they have a system there where you can click on a star or two stars or five stars. That's fine, but a little short written review would be really advantageous. And so I encourage you to do that.
I've got another question for you, Doug, to see, have we actually told them the great news about our new product that's on the market?
Oh, no, we haven't. Do I smell Dominic Regina's interference in this product?
No. I dreamt this one up myself.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is it?
We have another product for sale. It's been a long time coming, but what have we got?
Smelly t-shirt?
No, we have got the audiobook.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. The audiobook. Actually, before I left Arizona, the audiobook popped up one day for sale. And I have been asking these guys every few weeks. I would write to them and I'd say, will you please tell me why my audiobook isn't on sale yet? And they would write me back promptly, very polite letters saying, we understand your concern about your audiobook. Thank you for writing. Goodbye.
Thanks for writing. Goodbye. So yes, the audiobook, you know, it's finally on sale. Go grab one, grab several. You know, they make great things to listen to as you're falling asleep. And, you know, ultimately, there's a lot of people that need those audio resources. So it is available now. And I congratulate Doug for wading through all the minutiae at Amazon to make that happen. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. Buy the book, buy the audio book, buy the Kindle version, buy anything you can get your hands on, because it's a good thing to spend a little money on. In the meantime, you have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma and sole proprietor and recently moved back to Illinois of MedicareForTheLazyMan.com.
Bye-bye.